Apparently, Tommy Brock had turned the same way. Upon the top of the wall there were again the marks of a badger, and some ravelings of a sack had caught on a briar. Benjamin climbed over the wall into a meadow. He found another mole trap newly set. He was still upon the track of Tommy Brock. It was getting late in the afternoon. Other rabbits were coming out to enjoy the evening air. One of them, in a blue coat by himself, was busily hunting for dandelions. "Cousin Peter! Peter Rabbit! Peter Rabbit!" shouted Benjamin Bunny. The blue-coated rabbit sat up with pricked ears. "Whatever is the matter, Cousin Benjamin? Is it a cat or John Stoat Ferret?" "No, no, no! He's bagged my family, Tommy Brock, in a sack. Have you seen him?" "Tommy Brock? How many, Cousin Benjamin?" "7. Cousin Peter and all of them twins. Did he come this way? Please tell me quick." "Yes, yes, not 10 minutes since. He said they were caterpillars. I did think they were kicking rather hard for caterpillars." "Which way? Which way has he gone, Cousin Peter?" "He had a sack with something live in it. I watched him set a mole trap." "Let me use my mind, Cousin Benjamin. Tell me from the beginning." Benjamin did so. "My uncle Bouncer has displayed a lamentable want of discretion for his years," said Peter reflectively. "But there are two hopeful circumstances. Your family is alive and kicking, and Tommy Brock has had refreshments. He will probably go to sleep and keep them for breakfast."
"Which way?"
"Cousin Benjamin, compose yourself. I know very well which way. Because Mr. Todd was at home in the stick house, he has gone to Mr. Todd's other house at the top of Bull Banks. I partly know because he offered to leave any message at Sister Cottontail's. He said he would be in passing." Cottontail had married a black rabbit and gone to live on the hill. Peter hid his dandelions and accompanied the afflicted parent, who was all of a widder. They crossed several fields and began to climb the hill. The tracks of Tommy Brock were plainly to be seen. He seemed to have put down the sack every dozen yards to rest. "He must be very puffed. We are close behind him by the scent. What a nasty person," said Peter. The sunshine was still warm and slanting on the hill pastures. Halfway up, Cottontail was sitting in her doorway with 4 or 5 half-grown little rabbits playing about her, one black and the others brown. Cottontail had seen Tommy Brock passing in the distance, asked whether her husband was at home. She replied that Tommy Brock had rested twice while she watched him. He had nodded and pointed to the sack and seemed doubled up with laughing. "Come away, Peter. He will be cooking them. Come quicker," said Benjamin Bunny. They climbed up and up. He was at home. I saw his black ears peeping out of the hole. They lived too near the rocks to quarrel with their neighbors. Come on, Cousin Benjamin. When they came near the wood at the top of Bull Banks, they went cautiously. The trees grew amongst heaped up rocks, and there beneath the crag Mr. Todd had made one of his homes. It was at the top of a steep bank. The rocks and bushes overhung it. The rabbits crept up carefully, listening and peeping. The house was something between a cave, a prison, and a tumble-down pigsty. There was a strong door which was shut and locked. The setting sun made the window panes glow like red flame, but the kitchen fire was not alight. It was neatly laid with dry sticks, as the rabbits could see when they peeped through the window. Benjamin sighed with relief, but there were preparations upon the kitchen table which made him shudder. There was an immense empty pie dish of blue willow pattern, and a large carving knife and fork, and a chopper. At the other end of the table was a partly unfolded tablecloth, a plate, a tumbler, a knife and fork, salt cellar, mustard, and a chair. In short, preparations for one person's supper. No person was to be seen, and no young rabbits. The kitchen was empty and silent. The clock had run down. Peter and Benjamin flattened their noses against the window and stared into the dusk. Then they scrambled round the rocks to the other side of the house. It was damp and smelly and overgrown with thorns and briars. The rabbits shivered in their shoes.
"Oh, my poor rabbit babies! What a dreadful place! I shall never see them again," sighed Benjamin.
They crept up to the bedroom window. It was closed and bolted like the kitchen, but there were signs that the window had been recently opened. The cobwebs were disturbed, and there were fresh, dirty footmarks upon the window sill. The room inside was so dark that at first they could make out nothing, but they could hear a noise, a slow, deep, regular snoring grunt. And as their eyes became accustomed to the darkness, they perceived that somebody was asleep on Mr. Todd's bed, curled up under the blanket.
"He has gone to bed in his boots," whispered Peter.
Benjamin, who is all of a witter, pulled Peter off the windowsill. Tommy Brock's snores continued, grunty and regular, from Mr. Todd's bed. Nothing could be seen of the young family. The sun had set, an owl began to hoot in the wood. There were many unpleasant things lying about that had much better have been buried. Rabbit bones and skulls, and chicken legs and other horrors. It was a shocking place, and very dark. They went back to the front of the house and tried in every way to move the bolt of the kitchen window. They tried to push up a rusty nail between the window sashes, but it was of no use, especially without light. They sat side by side outside the window, whispering and listening. In half an hour the moon rose over the wood. It shone full and clear and cold upon the house, amongst the rocks, and in at the kitchen window. But alas, no little rabbit babies were to be seen. The moonbeams twinkled on the carving knife and the pie dish and made a path of brightness across the dirty floor. A light showed a little door in a wall beside the kitchen fireplace, a little iron door belonging to a brick oven of that old-fashioned sort that used to be heated with faggots of wood. And presently, at the same moment, Peter and Benjamin noticed that whenever they shook the window, the little door opposite shook in answer. The young family were alive, shut up in the oven. Benjamin was so excited that it was a mercy he did not awake Tommy Brock, whose snores continued solemnly in Mr. Todd's bed. But there really was not very much comfort in the discovery. They could not open the window, and although the young family was alive, the little rabbits were quite incapable of letting themselves out. They were not old enough to crawl. After much whispering, Peter and Benjamin decided to dig a tunnel. They began to burrow a yard or two lower down the bank. They hoped they might be able to work between the large stones under the house. The kitchen floor was so dirty that it was impossible to say whether it was made of earth or flags. They dug and dug for hours. They could not tunnel straight on account of stones, but by the end of the night they were under the kitchen floor. Benjamin was on his back scratching upwards. Peter's claws were worn down. He was outside the tunnel, shuffling sand away. He called out that it was morning, sunrise, and that the jays were making a noise down below in the woods. Benjamin Bunny came out of the dark tunnel, shaking the sand from his ears. He cleaned his face with his paws. Every minute the sun shone warmer on the top of the hill. In the valley there was a sea of white mist with golden tops of trees showing through. Again from the fields down below in the mist there came the angry cry of a jay, followed by the sharp, yelping bark of a fox. Then those two rabbits lost their heads completely. They did the most foolish thing that they could have done. They rushed into their short, new tunnel and hid themselves at the top end of it, under Mr. Todd's kitchen floor. Mr. Todd was coming up Bull Banks, and he was in the very worst of tempers. First he had been upset by breaking the plate. It was his own fault, but it was a china plate, the last of the dinner service that had belonged to his grandmother, old Vixen Todd. Then the midges had been very bad, and he had failed to catch a hen pheasant on her nest, and it had contained only 5 eggs, 2 of them addled. Mr. Todd had had an unsatisfactory night. As usual, when out of humor, he determined to move house. First he tried the pollard willow, but it was damp, and the otters had left a dead fish near it. Mr. Todd likes nobody's leavings but his own. He made his way up the hill. His temper was not improved by noticing unmistakable marks of a badger. No one else grubs up the moss so wantonly as Tommy Brock. Mr. Todd slapped his stick upon the earth and fumed. He guessed where Tommy Brock had gone to. He was further annoyed by the jaybird, which followed him persistently. It flew from tree to tree and scolded, warning every rabbit within hearing that either a cat or a fox was coming up the plantation. Once when it flew screaming over his head, Mr. Todd snapped at it and barked. He approached his house very carefully. With a large rusty key he sniffed, and his whiskers bristled. The house was locked up, but Mr. Todd had his doubts whether it was empty. He turned the rusty key in the lock, and the rabbits below could hear it. Mr. Todd opened the door cautiously and went in. The sight that met Mr. Todd's eyes in Mr. Todd's kitchen made Mr. Todd furious. There was Mr. Todd's chair, and Mr. Todd's pie dish, and his knife and fork and mustard and salt cellar, and his tablecloth that he had left folded up in the dresser, all out for supper or breakfast, without doubt for that odious Tommy Brock. There was a smell of fresh earth and dirty badger, which fortunately overpowered all smell of rabbit. But what absorbed Mr. Todd's attention was a noise, a deep, slow, regular snoring, grunting noise coming from his own bed. He peeped through the hinges of the half-open bedroom door, then he turned and came out of the house in a hurry. His whiskers bristled, and his coat collar stood on end with rage. For the next 20 minutes, Mr. Todd kept creeping cautiously into the house and retreating hurriedly out again. By degrees he ventured further in, right into the bedroom. When he was outside the house, he scratched up the earth with fury, but when he was inside, he did not like the look of Tommy Brock's teeth. He was lying on his back with his mouth open, grinning from ear to ear. He snored peacefully and regularly, but one eye was not perfectly shut. Mr. Todd came in and out of the bedroom. Twice he brought in his walking stick, and once he brought in the coal scuttle. But he thought better of it and took them away. When he came back after removing the coal scuttle, Tommy Brock was lying a little more sideways, but he seemed even sounder asleep. He was an incurably indolent person. He was not in the least afraid of Mr. Todd. He was simply too lazy and comfortable to move. Mr. Todd came back yet again into the bedroom with a clothesline. He stood a minute watching Tommy Brock and listened attentively to the snores. They were very loud indeed, but seemed quite natural. Mr. Todd turned his back towards the bed and undid the window. It creaked. He turned around with a jump. Tommy Brock, who had opened one eye, shut it hastily. The snores continued. Mr. Todd's proceedings were peculiar and rather difficult, because the bed was between the window and the door of the bedroom. He opened the window a little way and pushed out the greater part of the clothesline onto the window sill. The rest of the line, with a hook at the end, remained in his hand. Tommy Brock snored conscientiously. Mr. Todd stood and looked at him for a minute, then he left the room again. Tommy Brock opened both eyes and looked at the rope and grinned. There was a noise outside the window. Tommy Brock shut his eyes in a hurry. Mr. Todd had gone out at the front door and round to the back of the house. On the way, he stumbled over the rabbit burrow. If he had had any idea who was inside it, he would have pulled them out quickly. His foot went through the tunnel, nearly upon the top of Peter Rabbit and Benjamin. But, fortunately, he thought that it was some more of Tommy Brock's work. He looked upon the coil of line from the sill, listened for a moment, and then tied the rope to a tree. Tommy Brock watched him with one eye through the window. He was puzzled. Mr. Todd fetched a large, heavy pail full of water from the spring and staggered with it through the kitchen into his bedroom. Tommy Brock snored industriously, with rather a snort. Mr. Todd put down the pail beside the bed, took up the end of the rope with the hook, hesitated, and looked at Tommy Brock. The snores were almost apoplectic, but the grin was not quite so big. Mr. Todd gingerly mounted a chair by the head of the bedstead. His legs were dangerously near to Tommy Brock's teeth. He reached up and put the end of the rope with the hook over the head of the tester bed, where the curtains ought to hang. Mr. Todd's curtains were folded up and put away, owing to the house being unoccupied. So was the counterpane. Tommy Brock was covered with a blanket only. Mr. Todd, standing on the unsteady chair, looked down upon him attentively. He really was a first-prize sound sleeper. It seemed as though nothing would waken him, not even the flapping rope across the bed. Mr. Todd descended safely from the chair and endeavored to get up again with the pail of water. He intended to hang it from the hook, dangling over the head of Tommy Brock, in order to make a sort of shower bath, worked by a string through the window. But naturally, being a thin-legged person, though vindictive and sandy-whiskered, he was quite unable to lift the heavy weight to the level of the hook and rope. He very nearly overbalanced himself. The snores became more and more apoplectic. One of Tommy Brock's hind legs twitched under the blanket, but he still slept on peacefully. Mr. Todd and the pail descended from the chair without accident. After considerable thought, he emptied the water into a wash basin and jug. The empty pail was not too heavy for him. He slung it up, wobbling over the head of Tommy Brock. Surely there never was such a sleeper. Mr. Todd got up and down, down and up on the chair. As he could not lift the whole pailful of water at once, he fetched a milk jug and ladled quarts of water into the pail by degrees. The pail got fuller and fuller and swung like a pendulum. Occasionally a drop splashed over, but still Tommy Brock snored regularly and never moved, except in one eye. At last, Mr. Todd's preparations were complete. The pail was full of water. The rope was tightly strained over the top of the bed and across the windowsill to the tree outside. "It will make a great mess in my bedroom, but I could never sleep in that bed again without a spring cleaning of some sort," said Mr. Todd. Mr. Todd took a last look at the badger and softly left the room. He went out of the house, shutting the front door. The rabbits heard his footsteps over the tunnel. He ran round behind the house, intending to undo the rope in order to let fall the pail full of water upon Tommy Brock. "I will wake him up with an unpleasant surprise," said Mr. Todd. The moment he had gone, Tommy Brock got up in a hurry. He rolled Mr. Todd's dressing gown into a bundle, put it into the bed beneath the pail of water instead of himself, and left the room also, grinning immensely. He went into the kitchen, lighted the fire, and boiled the kettle. For the moment he did not trouble himself to cook the baby rabbits. When Mr. Todd got to the tree, he found that the weight and strain had dragged the knot so tight it was past untying. He was obliged to gnaw it with his teeth. He chewed and gnawed for more than 20 minutes. At last the rope gave way with a sudden jerk that it nearly pulled his teeth out and quite knocked him over backwards. Inside the house there was a great crash and splash, and the noise of a pail rolling over and over. But no screams. Mr. Todd was mystified. He sat quite still and listened attentively. Then he peeped in at the window. The water was dripping from the bed. The pail had rolled into a corner. In the middle of the bed, under the blanket, was a wet something, much flattened in the middle, where the pail had caught it, as it were across the tummy. Its head was covered by the wet blanket, and it was not snoring any longer. There was nothing stirring, no sound, except the drip, drop, drop, drip of water trickling from the mattress. Mr. Todd watched it for half an hour. His eyes glistened. Then he cut a caper and became so bold that he even tapped at the window, but the bundle never moved. Yes, there was no doubt about it. It had turned out even better than he had planned. The pail had hit poor old Tommy Brock and killed him dead. "I will bury that nasty person in the hole which he has dug. I will bring my bedding out and dry it in the sun," said Mr. Todd. "I will wash the tablecloth and spread it on the grass in the sun to bleach, and the blanket must be hung up in the wind, and the bed must be thoroughly disinfected and aired with a warming pan, and warmed with a hot water bottle. I will get soft soap and monkey's soap and all sorts of soap, and soda and scrubbing brushes and Persian powder and carbolic to remove the smell. I must have a disinfecting. Perhaps I may have to burn sulfur." He hurried round the house to get a shovel from the kitchen. "First I will arrange the hole, then I will drag out that person in the blanket." He opened the door. Tommy Brock was sitting at Mr. Todd's kitchen table, pouring out tea from Mr. Todd's teapot into Mr. Todd's teacup. He was quite dry himself and grinning, and he threw the cup of scalding tea all over Mr. Todd. Then Mr. Todd rushed upon Tommy Brock, and Tommy Brock grappled with Mr. Todd against the broken crockery. And there was a terrific battle all over the kitchen. To the rabbits underneath it sounded as if the floor would give way at each crash of falling furniture. They crept out of their tunnel and hung about amongst the rocks and bushes, listening anxiously. Inside the house, the racket was fearful. The rabbit bunnies in the oven woke up trembling. Perhaps it was fortunate they were shut up inside. Everything was upset except the kitchen table, and everything was broken except the mantelpiece and the kitchen fender. The crockery was smashed to atoms. The chairs were broken in the window, and the clock fell with a crash. There were handfuls of Mr. Todd's sandy whiskers. The vases fell off the mantelpiece, the canisters fell off the shelf, the kettle fell off the hob. Tommy Brock put his foot in a jar of raspberry jam, and the boiling water out of the kettle fell upon the tail of Mr. Todd. When the kettle fell, Tommy Brock, who was still grinning, happened to be uppermost, and he rolled Mr. Todd over and over like a log out at the door. Then the snarling and whirring went on outside, and they rolled over the bank and downhill, bumping over the rocks. There will never be any love lost between Tommy Brock and Mr. Todd. As soon as the coast was clear, Peter Rabbit and Benjamin Bunny came out of the bushes. "Now for it! Run in, Cousin Benjamin! Run in and get them while I watch the door!" But Benjamin was frightened. "Oh no! They are coming back!" "No, they are not." "Yes, they are!" "What dreadful bad language! I think they have fallen down the stone quarry." Still Benjamin hesitated, and Peter kept pushing him in. "Be quick, it's all right. Shut the oven door, Cousin Benjamin, so that he won't miss them." Decidedly, there were lively doings in Mr. Todd's kitchen. At home in the rabbit hole, things had not been quite comfortable. after quarreling at supper, Flopsy and old Mr. Bouncer had passed the sleepless night and quarreled again at breakfast. Old Mr. Bouncer could no longer deny that he had invited company into the rabbit hole, but he refused to reply to the questions and reproaches of Flopsy. The day passed heavily. Old Mr. Bouncer, very sulky, was huddled up in a corner, barricaded with a chair. Flopsy had taken away his pipe and hidden the tobacco. She had been having a complete turnout in spring cleaning to relieve her feelings. She had just finished. Old Mr. Bouncer, behind his chair, was wondering anxiously what she would do next. In Mr. Todd's kitchen, amidst the wreckage, Benjamin Bunny picked his way to the oven nervously through a thick cloud of dust. He opened the oven door, felt inside, and found something warm and wriggling. He lifted it out carefully and rejoined Peter Rabbit.
"I've got them. Can we get away? Shall we hide, Cousin Peter?"
Peter pricked his ears. Distant sounds of fighting still echoed in the wood. 5 minutes afterwards, two breathless rabbits came scuttering away from Bull Banks, half carrying, half dragging a sack between them, bumpity-bump over the grass. They reached home safely and burst into the rabbit hole. Great was old Mr. Bouncer's relief and Flopsy's joy when Peter and Benjamin arrived in triumph with the young family. The rabbit babies were rather tumbled and very hungry. They were fed and put to bed. They soon recovered. A new long pipe and a fresh supply of rabbit tobacco was presented to Mr. Bouncer. He was rather upon his dignity, but he accepted. Old Mr. Bouncer was forgiven, and they all had dinner. Then Peter and Benjamin told their story, but they had not waited long enough to be able to tell the end of the battle between Tommy Brock and Mr. Todd. End of chapter 17.
This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Recording by Marlo Diane. Forbidden Dragon. .blogspot.com. Great Big Treasury of Beatrix Potter by Beatrix Potter. Chapter 18. The Tale of Pigling Bland. Once upon a time there was an old pig called Aunt Pettitoes. She had eight of a family, four little girl pigs called Crosspatch, Suck-Suck, Yock-Yock, and Spot, and four little boy pigs called Alexander, Piggling Bland, Chin-Chin, and Stumpy. Stumpy had had an accident to his tail. The eight little pigs had very fine appetites. Yes, 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 they eat, and indeed they do eat, said Aunt Pettitoes, looking at her family with pride. Suddenly there were fearful squeals. Alexander had squeezed inside the hoops of the pig trough and stuck. Aunt Pettitoes and I dragged him out by the hind legs. Chin-Chin was already in disgrace. It was washing day, and he had eaten a piece of soap. And presently, in a basket of clean clothes, we found another dirty little pig. "Chet-tut-tut, whichever is this?" grunted Aunt Pettitoes. Now, all the pig family are pink, or pink with black spots, but this little pig child was smutty black all over. When it had been popped into a tub, it proved to be Yock-Yock. I went into the garden. There I found Crosspatch and Suck-Suck rooting up carrots. I whipped them myself and led them out by the ears. Crosspatch tried to bite me. "Aunt Pettitoes, Aunt Pettitoes, you are a worthy person, but your family is not well brought up. Every one of them has been in mischief, except Spot and Pigling Bland. Yes, yes, sighed Aunt Pettitoes, and they drink bucketfuls of milk. I shall have to get another cow. Good little Spot shall stay at home to do the housework, but the others must go. Four little boy pigs and four little girl pigs are too many altogether. Yes, 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 said Aunt Pettitoes. There will be more to eat without them. So Chin-Chin and Suck-Suck went away in a wheelbarrow, and Stumpy, Yawk-Yawk, and Crosspatch rode away in a cart. And the other two little boy pigs, Pigling Bland and Alexander, went to market. We brushed their coats, we curled their tails, and washed their little faces, and wished them good-bye in the yard. Aunt Pettitoes wiped her eyes with a large pocket handkerchief. Then she wiped Pigling Bland's nose and shed tears. Then she wiped Alexander's nose and shed tears. Then she passed the handkerchief to Spot. Aunt Pettitoes sighed and grunted and addressed those little pigs as follows. Now, Pigling Bland, son Pigling Bland, you must go to market. Take your brother Alexander by the hand. Mind your Sunday clothes, and remember to blow your nose. Aunt Pettitoes passed round the handkerchief again. Beware of traps. Hen roosts, bacon and eggs, always walk upon your hind legs. Pigling Bland, who was a sedate little pig, looked solemnly at his mother. A tear trickled down his cheek. Aunt Pettitoes turned to the other. Now, son Alexander, take the hand. Wee, 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 giggled Alexander. Take the hand of your brother, Pigling Bland. You must go to the market. Mind, wee, 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 interrupted Alexander again. You put me out, said Aunt Pettitoes. Observe signposts and milestones. Do not gobble herringbones. And remember, said I impressively, if you once cross the county boundary, you cannot come back. Alexander, you are not attending. Here are two licenses permitting two pigs to go to market in Lancashire. Attend, Alexander. I have had no end of trouble in getting these papers from the policeman. Pigling Bland listened gravely. Alexander was hopelessly volatile. I pinned the papers for safety inside their waistcoat pockets. Aunt Pettitoes gave to each a little bundle and ate conversation peppermints with appropriate moral sentiments and screws of paper. Then they started. Pigling Bland and Alexander trotted along steadily for a mile. At least, Pigling Bland did. Alexander made the road half as long again by skipping from side to side. He danced about and pinched his brother, singing, "This pig went to the market. This pig stayed at home. This pig had a bit of meat. Let's see what they have given us for dinner, Pigling." Pigling Bland and Alexander sat down and untied their bundles. Alexander gobbled up his dinner in no time. He had already eaten all his own peppermints. "Give me one of yours, please, Pigling." "But I wish to preserve them for emergencies," said Pigling Bland doubtfully. Alexander went into squeals of laughter. Then he pricked Pigling with the pin that had fastened his pig paper. And when Pigling slapped him, he dropped the pin and tried to take Pigling's pin, and the papers got mixed up. Pigling Bland reproved Alexander. But presently they made it up again and trotted away together singing. "Tom, Tom, the piper's son, stole a pig and away he ran, but all the tune that he could play was over the hills and far away." "What's that, young sirs? Stole a pig? Where are your licenses?" said the policeman. They had nearly run against him around a corner. Pigling Bland pulled out his paper. Alexander, after fumbling, handed over something scrumply. 2 2½-ounce conversation sweeties at 3 farthings. What's this? This ain't a license. Alexander's nose lengthened visibly. He had lost it. I had one. Indeed, I had, Mr. Policeman. It's not likely they let you start without. I am passing the farm. You may walk with me. Can I come back, too? Inquired Pigling Bland. I see no reason, young sir. Your paper is all right. Pigling Bland did not like going on alone, and it was beginning to rain, but it is unwise to argue with the police. He gave his brother a peppermint and watched him out of sight. To conclude the adventures of Alexander, the policeman sauntered up to the house about tea-time, followed by a damp, subdued little pig. I disposed of Alexander in the neighborhood. He did fairly well when he had settled down. Pigling Bland went on alone, dejectedly. He came to Crossroads and a signpost to Market Town, 5 miles. Over the hills, 4 miles. To Pettitoe's Farm, 3 miles. Pigling Bland was shocked. There was little hope of sleeping in Market Town, and tomorrow was the hiring fair. It was deplorable to think how much time had been wasted by the frivolity of Alexander. He glanced wistfully along the road towards the hills, and then set off, walking obediently the other way, buttoning up his coat against the rain. He had never wanted to go, and the idea of standing all by himself in a crowded market, to be stared at, pushed, and hired by some big, strange farmer, was very disagreeable. "I wish I could have a little garden and grow potatoes," said Pigling Bland. He put his cold hand in his pocket and felt his paper. He put his other hand in his other pocket and felt another paper. "Alexander's!" Pigling squealed, then ran back frantically, hoping to overtake Alexander and the policeman. He took a wrong turn, several wrong turns, and was quite lost. It grew dark. The wind whistled. The trees creaked and groaned. Pigling Bland became frightened and cried, "Wee, wee, wee! I can't find my way home!" After an hour's wandering, he got out of the wood. The moon shone through the clouds, and Pigling Bland saw a country that was new to him. The road crossed a moor. Below was a wide valley, with a river twinkling in the moonlight, and beyond, in misty distance, lay the hills. He saw a small wooden hut, made his way to it, and crept inside. "I am afraid it is a hen house. But what can I do?" said Pigling Bland, wet and cold and quite tired out. "Bacon and eggs, bacon and eggs," clucked a hen on a perch. "Trap, trap, trap, cackle, cackle, cackle," scolded the disturbed cockerel. To market, chickity jig," clucked a broody white hen roosting next to him. Pigling Bland, much alarmed, determined to leave at daybreak. In the meantime, he and the hens fell asleep. In less than an hour, they were all awakened. The owner, Mr. Peter Thomas Piperson, came with a lantern and a hamper to catch 6 fowls to take to market in the morning. He grabbed the white hen roosting next to the cock. Then his eye fell upon Pigling Bland, squeezed up in a corner. He made a singular remark. "Hello, here's another," seized Pigling by the scruff of the neck, and dropped him into the hamper. Then he dropped in 5 more dirty, kicking, cackling hens upon the top of Pigling Bland. The hamper, containing 6 fowls and a young pig, was no light weight. It was taken downhill, unsteadily, with jerks. Pigling, although nearly scratched to pieces, contrived to hide the papers and peppermints inside his clothes. At last, the hamper was bumped down upon a kitchen floor, the lid was opened, and Pigling was lifted out. He looked up, blinking, and saw an offensively ugly elderly man, grinning from ear to ear.
"This one's come of himself, whatever," said Mr. Piperson, turning Pigling's pockets inside out.
He pushed the hamper into a corner, threw a sack over it to keep the hens quiet, put a pot on the fire, and unlaced his boots. Pigling Bland drew forward a copy stool and sat on the edge of it, shyly warming his hands. Mr. Piperson pulled off a boot and threw it against the wainscot at the further end of the kitchen. There was a smothered noise.
"Shut up," said Mr. Piperson.
Pigling Bland warmed his hands and eyed him. Mr. Piperson pulled off the other boot and flung it after the first. There was again a curious noise.
"Be quiet, will ye?"
said Mr. Piperson. Pigling Bland sat on the very edge of the copy stool. Mr. Piperson fetched meal from a chest and made porridge. It seemed to Pigling that something at the further end of the kitchen was taking a suppressed interest in the cooking, but he was too hungry to be troubled by noises. Mr. Piperson poured out 3 platefuls, for himself, for Pigling, and a third, after glaring at Pigling. He put away with much scuffling, and locked up. Pigling Bland ate his supper discreetly. After supper, Mr. Piperson consulted an almanac, and felt Pigling's ribs. It was too late in the season for curing bacon, and he grudged his meal. Besides, the hens had seen this pig. He looked at the small remains of a flitch, side of bacon, and then looked undecidedly at Pigling.
"You may sleep on the rug,"
said Mr. Peter Thomas Piperson. Pigling Bland slept like a top. In the morning, Mr. Piperson made more porridge. The weather was warmer. He looked how much meal was left in the chest, and seemed dissatisfied.
"You'll likely be moving on again," said he to Pigling Bland.
Before Pigling could reply, a neighbor, who was giving Mr. Piperson and the hens a lift, whistled from the gate. Mr. Piperson hurried out with the hamper, enjoining Pigling to shut the door behind him, and not meddle with naught.
"Or, I'll come back and skin ye," said Mr. Piperson.
It crossed Pigling's mind that, if he had asked for a lift too, he might still have been in time for market. But he distrusted Peter Thomas. After finishing breakfast at his leisure, Pigling had a look round the cottage. Everything was locked up. He found some potato peelings in a bucket in the back kitchen. Pigling ate the peel and washed up the porridge plates in the bucket. He sang while he worked. "Tom with his pipe made such a noise, he called up all the girls and boys, and they all ran to hear him play over the hills and far away." Suddenly, a little smothered voice chimed in.
"Over the hills and a great way off, the wind shall blow my top knot off."
Pigling Bland put down a plate which he was wiping and listened. After a long pause, Pigling went on tiptoe and peeped round the door into the front kitchen. There was nobody there. After another pause, Pigling approached the door of the locked cupboard and snuffed at the keyhole. It was quite quiet. After another long pause, Pigling pushed a peppermint under the door. It was sucked in immediately. In the course of the day, Pigling pushed in all his remaining 6 peppermints. When Mr. Piperson returned, he found Pigling sitting before the fire. He had brushed up the hearth and put on the pot to boil. the meal was not gitted able. Mr. Piperson was very affable. He slapped Pigling on the back, made lots of porridge, and forgot to lock the meal chest. He did lock the cupboard door, but without properly shutting it. He went to bed early, and told Pigling upon no account to disturb him next day before 12 o'clock. Pigling Bland sat by the fire, eating his supper. All at once, at his elbow, a little voice spoke.
"My name is Pickwick. Make me more porridge, please."
Pigling Bland jumped and looked round. A perfectly lovely little black Berkshire pig stood smiling beside him. She had twinkly little screwed-up eyes, a double chin, and a short turned-up nose. She pointed at Pigling's plate. He hastily gave it to her, and fled to the meal chest. "How did you come here?" asked Pigling Bland.
"Stolen," replied Pigwig, with her mouth full.
Pigling helped himself to meal without scruple. "What for?"
"Bacon, hams," replied Pigwig cheerfully.
"Why on earth don't you run away?" exclaimed the horrified Pigling.
"I shall after supper," said Pigwig decidedly.
Pigling Bland made more porridge and watched her shyly. She finished a second plate, got up, and looked about her, as though she were going to start. "You can't go in the dark," said Pigling Bland. Pigwig looked anxious. "Do you know your way by daylight?"
"I know we can see this little white house from the hills across the river. Which way are you going, Mr. Pig?"
"To market. I have 2 pig papers. I might take you to the bridge, if you have no objection," said Pigling, much confused and sitting on the edge of his copy stool. Pigwig's gratitude was such, and she asked so many questions, that it became embarrassing to Pigling Bland. He was obliged to shut his eyes and pretend to sleep. She became quiet, and there was a smell of peppermint. "I thought you had eaten them," said Pigling, waking suddenly.
"Only the corners," replied Pigwig,
studying the sentiments with much interest by the firelight. "I wish you wouldn't. He might smell them through the ceiling," said the alarmed Pigling. Pigwig put back the sticky peppermints into her pocket.
"Sing something," she demanded.
"I am sorry. I have a toothache," said Pigling, much dismayed.
"Then I will sing," replied Pigwig. "You will not mind if I say itty to ditty? I have forgotten some of the words."
Pigling Bland made no objection. He sat with his eyes half shut and watched her. She wagged her head and rocked about, clapping time and singing in a sweet little grunty voice.
"A funny old mother pig lived in a sty, and 3 little piggies had she. Titty, titty, a ditty, ump, ump, ump. And the little piggy said, wee, wee."
She sang successfully through 3 or 4 verses, only at every verse her head nodded a little lower, and her little twinkly eyes closed up.
"Those 3 little piggies grew peaky and lean might very well be. For somehow they couldn't say oomph, 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 and they wouldn't say wee, wee, wee. For somehow they couldn't say..."
Pigwig's head bobbed lower and lower until she rolled over, a little round ball, fast asleep on the hearth rug. Pigling Bland, on tiptoe, covered her up with an antimacassar. He was afraid to go to sleep himself. For the rest of the night, he sat listening to the chirping of the crickets and to the snores of Mr. Piperson overhead. Early in the morning, between dark and daylight, Pigling tied up his little bundle and woke up Pigwig. She was excited and half frightened.
But it's dark. How can we find our way?
The cock is crowed. We must start before the hens come out. They might shout to Mr. Piperson. Pigwig sat down again and commenced to cry. Come away, Pigwig. We can see when we get used to it. Come, I can hear them clucking. Pigling had never said sh to a hen in his life, being peaceable. Also, he remembered the hamper. He opened the house door quietly and shut it after them. There was no garden. The neighborhood of Mr. Piperson's was all scratched up by fowls. They slipped away, hand in hand, across an untidy field to the road. Tom, Tom, the piper's son, stole a pig and away he ran, but all the tune that he could play was over the hills and far away. Come, Pigwig, we must get to the bridge before folks are stirring.
Why do you want to go to the market, Pigling?
Inquired Pigwig. The sun rose while they were crossing the moor, a dazzling of light over the tops of the hills. The sunshine crept down the slopes into the peaceful green valleys, where little white cottages nestled in gardens and orchards.
That's Westmoreland, said Pigwig.
She dropped Pigling's hand and commenced to dance, singing, presently. I want to grow potatoes.
Have a peppermint, said Pigwig.
Pigling Bland refused quite crossly.
Does your poor toothy hurt?
Inquired Pigwig. Pigling Bland grunted. Pigwig ate the peppermint herself and followed the opposite side of the road.
Pigwig, keep under the wall. There's a man plowing.
Pigwig crossed over. They hurried down the hill toward the county boundary. Suddenly, Pigling stopped. He heard wheels. Slowly, jogging up the road below them, came a tradesman's cart. The reins flapped on the horse's back. The grocer was reading a newspaper.
Take that peppermint out of your mouth, Pigwig. We may have to run.
Don't say one word, leave it to me, and in sight of the bridge, said poor Pigling, nearly crying. He began to walk frightfully lame, holding Pigwig's arm. The grocer, intent upon his newspaper, might have passed them, if his horse had not shied and snorted. He pulled the cart crossways and held down his whip. Hello, where are you going to? Pigling Bland stared at him vacantly.
Are you deaf? Are you going to market?
Pigling nodded slowly. I thought as much. It was yesterday. Show me your license. Pigling stared at the off hind shoe of the grocer's horse, which had picked up a stone. The grocer flicked his whip. Papers? Pig license? Pigling fumbled in all his pockets and handed up the papers. The grocer read them, but still seemed dissatisfied. This here pig is a young lady. Is her name Alexander? Pigwig opened her mouth and shut it again. Pigling coughed asthmatically. The grocer ran his finger down the advertisement column of his newspaper. Lost, stolen, or strayed? 10S reward. He looked suspiciously at Pigwig. Then he stood up in the trap and whistled for the plowman. You wait here while I drive on and speak to him, said the grocer, gathering up the reins. He knew that pigs are slippery, but surely such a very lame pig could never run.
Not yet, Pigwig.
He will look back. The grocer did so. He saw the two pigs, stock still in the middle of the road. Then he looked over at his horse's heels. It was lame also. The stone took some time to knock out, after he got to the ploughman. "Now, Pigwig, now," said Pigling Bland. Never did any pigs run as these pigs ran. They raced and squealed and pelted down the long white hill towards the bridge. Little fat Pigwig's petticoats fluttered, and her feet went pitter-patter-pitter as she bounded and jumped. They ran and they ran and they ran down the hill and across a shortcut on level green turf at the bottom, between pebble beds and rushes. They came to the river, they came to the bridge, they crossed it hand in hand. Then over the hills and far away she danced with Pigling Bland. End of the Tale of Pigling Bland. Recorded by Marlo Diane. March 6, 2006. Piscataway West, Prince Edward Island.
This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information and to find out how you can volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Ginger and Pickles by Beatrix Potter. Dedicated with very kind regards to old Mr. John Taylor, who thinks he might pass as a dormouse. 3 years in bed, and never a grumble. Once upon a time there was a village shop. The name over the window was Ginger and Pickles. It was a little small shop, just the right size for dolls. Lucinda and Jane Doll Cook always bought their groceries at Ginger and Pickles. The counter inside was a convenient height for rabbits. Ginger and Pickles sold red spotty pocket handkerchiefs at 1/3 farthings. They also sold sugar and snuff and galoshes. In fact, although it was such a small shop, it sold nearly everything, except a few things that you want in a hurry, like bootlaces, hairpins, and mutton chops. Ginger and Pickles were the people who kept the shop. Ginger was a yellow tomcat, and Pickles was a terrier. The rabbits were always a little bit afraid of Pickles. The shop was also patronized by mice, only the mice were rather afraid of Ginger. Ginger usually requested Pickles to serve them, because he said it made his mouth water. "I cannot bear," said he, "to see them going out at the door carrying their little parcels." "I have the same feeling about rats," replied Pickles, "but it would never do to eat our customers. They would leave us and go to Tabitha Twitchit's." "On the contrary, they would go nowhere," replied Ginger gloomily. Tabitha Twitchit kept the only other shop in the village. She did not give credit. "But there is no money in what is called the till." Ginger and Pickles gave unlimited credit. Now the meaning of credit is this. When a customer buys a bar of soap, instead of the customer pulling out a purse and paying for it, she says she will pay another time. And Pickles makes a low bow and says, "With pleasure, madam," and it is written down in a book. The customers come again and again, and buy quantities in spite of being afraid of Ginger and Pickles. The customers came in crowds every day, and bought quantities, especially the toffee customers. But there was always no money. They never paid for as much as a penny worth of peppermints. But the sales were enormous, 10 times as large as Tabitha Twitchit's. And there was always no money. Ginger and Pickles were obliged to eat their own goods. Pickles ate biscuits, and Ginger ate a dried haddock. They ate them by candlelight, after the shop was closed. "It is very uncomfortable. I am afraid I shall be summoned. I have tried in vain to get a license upon credit at the post office, said Pickles. The place is full of policemen. I met one as I was coming home. Let us send in the bill again to Samuel Whiskers, Ginger. He owes 22 and 9 for bacon. I do not believe that he intends to pay it all, replied Ginger. When it came to January 1st, there was still no money, and Pickles was unable to buy a dog license. It is very unpleasant. I am afraid of the police, said Pickles. It is your own fault for being a terrier. I do not require a license, and neither does Kip, the collie dog. And I feel sure that Anna Maria pockets things. Where are all the cream crackers? You have eaten them yourself, replied Ginger. Ginger and Pickles retired into the back parlour. They did accounts. They added up sums and sums and sums. Samuel Whiskers has run up a bill as long as his tail. He has had 1 ounce and 3/4 of snuff since October. What is 7 pounds of butter at 1 and 3, and a stick of sealing wax and 4 matches? Send in all the bills again to everybody, with compliments, replied Ginger. After a time they heard a noise in the shop, as if something had been pushed in at the door. They came out of the back parlour. There was an envelope lying on the counter, and a policeman writing in a notebook. Pickles nearly had a fit. He barked and he barked and made little rushes. "Bite him, Pickles, bite him!" spluttered Ginger behind a sugar barrel. "He's only a German doll!" The policeman went on writing in his notebook. Twice he put his pencil in his mouth, and once he dipped it in the treacle. Pickles barked till he was hoarse, but still the policeman took no notice. He had bead eyes, and his helmet was sewed on with stitches. At length, on his last little rush, Pickles found that the shop was empty. The policeman had disappeared. But the envelope remained.
"Do you think that he has gone to fetch a real live policeman? I'm afraid it is a summons," said Pickles.
"No," replied Ginger, who had opened the envelope. "It is the rates and taxes. 3 pounds 19, 11 and 3/4. Pounds are British money. The 19 is shillings, and then pence." "This is the last straw," said Pickles. "Let us close the shop." They put up the shutters and left. But they have not removed from the neighbourhood. In fact, some people wish they had gone further. Ginger is living in the Warren, game preserve for rabbits. I do not know what occupation he pursues. He looks stout and comfortable. Pickles is at present a gamekeeper. After a time, Mr. John Dormouse and his daughter began to sell peppermints and candles. But they did not keep self-fitting sixes, and it takes 5 mice to carry 1 7-inch candle. The closing of the shop caused great inconvenience. Tabitha Twitchit immediately raised the price of everything 1/2, and she continued to refuse to give credit. Of course, there are the tradesmen's carts, the butcher, the fishman, and Timothy Baker. But a person cannot live on seed wigs and sponge cake and butter buns, not even when the sponge cake is as good as Timothy's. And Miss Dormouse refused to take back the ends when they were brought back to her with complaints. And when Mr. John Dormouse was complained to, he stayed in bed, and would say nothing but "very snug," which is not the way to carry on a retail business. Besides, the candles which they sell behave very strangely in warm weather. So everybody was pleased when Sally Hennypenny sent out a printed poster to say that she was going to reopen the shop. Henny's opening sale, Grand Cooperative Jumble, Penny's penny prices. Come buy, come try, come buy. The poster really was most enticing. There was a rush upon the opening day. The shop was crammed with customers, and there were crowds of mice upon the biscuit canisters. Sally Hennypenny gets rather flustered when she tries to count out change, and she insists on being paid cash, but she is quite harmless. And she has laid in a remarkable assortment of bargains. There is something to please everybody. End of Ginger and Pickles.